Move over, Japanese beetle. There's a new pest in town. The brown marmorated stink bug has been found in Scott County. Today we'll find out about the latest invasive insect to show up in Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. Iowa State University Extension entomologist Donald Lewis is here. He'll give us the lowdown on the stink bug. I'll also talk with horticulturist Dwayne Gillis with Iowa State University Extension in Scott County, where the stink bugs have been found. And horticulturist Richard Giron will also be here. He and Donald will answer your questions about insects and plants. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and in a few minutes, Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension will be here to answer your plant questions. But we're going to start the hour in the insect world with Iowa State University Extension entomologist Donald Lewis. Hello, Donald.
Good morning.
And today we're going to talk about the brown marmorated stink bug. It's an invasive insect that has been found in established populations in Scott County. So horticulturist Dwayne Gillis with Iowa State University Extension in Scott County is also here with us today. Hello, Dwayne.
Hello, Charity.
Thank you so much for being on the show today. And Donald, let's start with you. What is the brown marmorated stink bug?
It's one of many stink bugs. We've had stink bugs in the United States forever. So it's not like this is a brand new group. And most people know what stink bugs are, although there are lots of insects that have a disagreeable smell. But the ones that have a disagreeable smell and a shield shape and have five segments in their antenna, I know that's a picky little detail, but that group is called the stink bugs. And there are hundreds of species in that group. A new species to the United States arrived from Asia and was found in all places in Pennsylvania back in 1998. And this invasive species is doing what invaders do. They move around, they spread, they disperse, they establish, and then their populations explode. And the brown marmorated stink bug has done that in about 30 different states so far.
And when it arrives, when it gets to Iowa and all of these other places around the country, what does it do?
This one is a double whammy. And at first, what we will notice is that in the fall of the year, this stink bug behaves like a box elder bug. That is, when the days get short, when we get past the equinox, these insects go into a migration phase that takes them away from their summer feeding spots and takes them, they move around, going to protected, sheltered locations where they can spend the winter. And during that migration period, they are attracted to the warm, sunny side of the house where they perch on the side of the house. The sun goes down, they get a little chilly, they crawl into a crack. The next thing we know, box elder bugs, multicolored Asian lady beetles, and soon the brown marmorated stink bug will be inside your house, creating this annoyance, creating this nuisance factor. That's what we will notice first, eventually.
And wait a moment, since this is a stink bug, will that also bring with it a smell that we don't get from the lady beetles and from the box elder bugs?
Both of those have a bit of an odor, and some people will say, no, no, ladybugs don't have a bit of an odor, they stink. Yes, this will be worse. The defensive secretions of the stink bugs are very adequately described in their name. These bugs stink, and they will bring that smell with them into the house in the fall of the year. So in addition to having this large 5/8 inch long insect buzzing around your house, when you approach them, you'll find that they stink. Now, the second part of the problem with the brown marmorated stink bug, though, is it feeds on sap from plants. And when I say plants, it's all of them. It'll be trees and shrubs and vegetables and fruits and corn and soybeans and other field crops. So damage to gardens and fruit producers and corn and soybean growers will happen later on as the populations build up.
How do we find it? How do we look for this bug?
Well, it's kind of like looking for box elder bugs. You just wait. We have had a trapping program around the state, and Dwayne Gissel and several of the other county horticulturists have put up traps for us that turned out to be ineffective. It turns out we find it by homeowners noticing it on the side of their house, and Dwayne can speak to how they find it, but we have been looking for it for several years. We've known that it's been in adjacent states to the east of us, and it was just a matter of time till it got here. So because it's a large insect, 5/8 of an inch, it's very easy to find when they are present.
All right, Dwayne, where was it found in Scott County?
Well, the very first sample that was turned in was by one of our master gardeners. We always try to keep them informed to be on the lookout for these things. And her husband actually saw it on a window screen, and she went, took a look at it and said, oh, I think that's the one that they've been talking about. And she brought it into the office here, and we were pretty sure it was a brown marmorated stink bug, but I sent it on to the plant and insect diagnostic clinic at Iowa State, and Dr. Jesse and Donald Lewis confirmed that it was brown marmorated stink bug.
And once you found it in Scott County, did that give you a clue? Were you able to look for the populations from there?
Actually, it's just like Donald says. It's the homeowner that presents them to us. What we did is we informed our local columnist. We have a really strong garden column with the Quad City Times here. And she did an article on them. And it was in the Sunday paper. And Monday morning, we had calls. And people, when we just asked people to bring them in. So we've had them from Bettendorf, Davenport, and actually even had one from East Moline brought in. So
they're all over the place.
Yeah. So unfortunately, it looks like we've, as Dr. Lewis can tell you, we have a breeding population here, it looks like.
And have people already seen damage from them in their gardens?
Not that we've noticed or not that we've had calls on them. So that I'm sure as the population increases, that will probably take place.
Dwayne, people are bringing you individual bugs, aren't they?
That's true.
Yeah. And back east, Virginia, Maryland, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, when this thing invades, they have tens of thousands of them on the side of their house. So our population, though we think it is established here, is very, very small compared to what others have reported in other parts of the United States and what it is likely to be.
So now that we know they're in Scott County, what happens next?
Well, we keep looking, and we rush news releases to all of our newspaper contributors, and we talk about it on the radio, and we try to inform the public that this is happening. We told you it would happen, and we were right. It was only a matter of time till it got here. The controls will vary, and this is probably a few years down the line until it gets bad enough that people will actually worry about controlling. But vegetable producers and fruit growers and corn and soybean growers will have a few years now to learn from our eastern counterparts what works, what doesn't. At the same time, there's an effort to find biological control so that we can rely less on pesticides. But for now, people who find them should let us know. And as you find them, discard them the same way we control box elder bugs and multicolored Asian lady beetles in the house.
And how, again, for people who are now going to be looking for them, if you see a bug that looks a little bit like this, how do you know it's this insect?
Dwayne, how did you confirm for people that that's what it was?
Well, if you actually go to the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic's website, there's a link to an article that was put together by Dr. Lewis and Laura Jesse with some excellent photos, also photos of insects that can be confused with it. And it works very well when you look at those photos, whether or not what you have is the brown marmorated stink bug or something else. And we have had samples brought in where people weren't sure. We had a couple western conifer seed bugs brought in because they do look somewhat similar, but they are different.
Compared to other brown stink bugs, and we have always had brown-colored stink bugs, this one has a little more speckling, mottling, marbling on the back. But the distinguishing characteristic is when you have a good specimen and the antennae are still on there, the antennae are banded. There's a dark, light, dark alternating pattern on the antennae of the brown marmorated stink bug that is not on others. But again, we're looking for something that's large, 5/8 of an inch, shield-shaped, sort of a coat of arms shape maybe, not terribly long and skinny, almost oblong in its outline.
How bad is this, Donald?
Well, right now for us, it's not so bad at all. But one figure that we have carried with us now over the last year is that the Maryland apple growers, which can't be a very large group on the national schedule, but it's a sizable production of apples in the state of Maryland, they experienced a $35 million crop loss from stink bug injury. And controlling is going to be very expensive. The brown marmorated stink bugs are in all the crops, and they will continue to invade orchards and fields and gardens. And spraying once will kill the ones that are there now, but in a few days, they're likely to have to spray again. So it's going to be very expensive to, it's going to be very damaging to vegetables and fruits and field crops. It's going to be very annoying to homeowners, and it's going to be an additional expense to control.
Earlier this summer, we talked about the spotted wing fruit fly, which is invading right now and was found in Story County and is a threat to softer fruit. Now we're talking about the brown marmorated stink bug, which sounds like it's going to be a threat to any kind of fruit or crop, really.
Mm-hmm.
This is really scary.
It is. It's a tough time to be a producer. You've got all these extra challenges from labor to chemical costs to fuel costs, and now you have to fight these new invasive insects. But invasion of the United States by insects is not new. We brought the honeybee back with the first colonists. We had the European corn borer arrive back in the 1940s. We have always had these new challenges brought to us, and we are still here. We are still producing fruits and vegetables. This will be a major challenge. Both of the ones you've mentioned will be problematic for us, but we will survive, I'm sure.
Donald Lewis, Iowa State University Extension entomologist. Stay with us, Donald, and he will be answering your questions as the hour goes on. Dwayne Gillis, thank you very much for coming by.
Thank you.
Horticulturist Dwayne Gillis with Iowa State University Extension in Scott County, and that is where these breeding populations of the brown marmorated stink bug have been found. You can find out more about that if you go to our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio. You can also see a picture of the insect, so you can go out and see if that's something you see around your house. Coming up in just a moment, Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension Horticulture will be with us to answer your questions, and you can join the conversation. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. And with me, Donald Lewis, Iowa State University Extension entomologist. And joining us now, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here with us today. And you are welcome to join our conversation with your questions about insects or about plants. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we're going to start with Alice in Cascade. Hello, Alice.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
My question's about that marmorated stink bug. Does it have any? Does anything eat it? Does it have any natural enemies or natural predators that would possibly eat that?
They stink for a reason, Alice.
Yeah,
and stinking is a defensive mechanism that protects them from most predators. Now, they do have parasites, and when we think of biological controls, we tend to think of the predators because they're big, they're attractive, they're lady beetles, they're praying mantids, and predators probably won't have much of an impact. I don't think your chickens are even going to eat a lot of these, but parasites, the ones that live inside the body of other insects, are a likely possibility for us, especially little tiny wasps that search out and lay their eggs in the eggs of the stink bug. Now, this is all being researched. There is this desperate effort by the USDA to help us out with this. It's just not happening yet, but someday it will. We just have to get to that point.
All right, Alice, thank you so much for your call. And Donald, can you give me an idea of the timeline? When did these, again, first show up in Pennsylvania, and how long has it taken them to spread?
The first ones were back in about 1998, and they believe they were probably there a couple of years earlier. I believe the date of the first, oh, we really know what this is, was like 2000, was approximately 2001. So this is still new to us. It appears to have arrived from Asia, as do many of our invasive species, and we don't know how it got to Allentown, Pennsylvania. It is an unlikely place. You expect things to happen in ports like New Orleans or Norfolk, Virginia, or someplace like that. But when we get shipping containers from all over the world that are transported into the heartland of the United States, those containers can contain things we don't want, as well as the products that we are waiting for. So it's not been here a long time. The answer to your question is it will take a few years before we see those tens of thousands on the sides of houses. But the Virginia experience, West Virginia experience this past year was not very encouraging. And that is, in 2011, they had a very low number of marmorated stink bugs. So they said, oh, great, the populations are going down. In 2012, the populations exploded again, that this insect has the ability to reproduce very quickly and to produce lots of offspring in a short period of time. So we could be to unbearable numbers fairly quickly, but I'm predicting it'll be a year or so till we get there.
Well, and you mentioned the USDA is frantically searching for a solution. So a frantic search for a solution to an invasive pest like this can take over a decade.
Oh, certainly. Think of the European corn borer and how we dealt with that one for 4 to 5 decades before we had good controls for that, and then eventually we had to go to other technology for the success we have today. Japanese beetle. Think of the invasion sequence that you find a few in your yard, you have arrival, you have establishment, and then you have an explosion followed by moderation. We'll go through that with the brown marmorated stink bug as well.
All right. You can join our conversation with your questions. It doesn't have to be about insects. You can ask questions about plants as well at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. That number again, 866-780-9100. And this is an email from Wes in Perry. He says, it's from Marilyn in Perry. And she says, my father has a mature ash tree that about 10 feet up the trunk divides into two main branches. Mm-hmm. At the point where the tree divides into the two branches, a crack has developed. Mm-hmm. My husband has inserted a threaded rod that holds the two branches together. His question is, should he fill that crack? It's about a half inch wide. He's thought about using a latex caulk to fill it. Is there something else that he should use to deter insects?
Well, actually, you shouldn't fill it. And I think that's a temporary Band-Aid. So my suggestion would be to plant another tree nearby if they can, because I'm guessing at this point that at some point in the near future, we're going to have a storm that will destroy that tree, even though it has that rod through it. So I would kind of plan accordingly and plant a new tree and give that new tree a head start.
And if that tree's in a place where it could damage the house or a car or something like that, do they need to think about taking it down?
That would be something to consider. Also, if it's a very valuable tree, they may want to have a tree care service come out and maybe cable and brace that tree, where they actually go up high in the canopy and cable the branches together so they don't separate in a storm. So that rod itself is not sufficient typically.
All right. And, of course, this is an ash tree. And mm-hmm. back to Donald, we're waiting for the invasive insect that's going to take out that ash tree. So if they want to plant a new tree nearby, should they not plant an ash tree?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. They should not buy and plant an ash tree. In fact, it may be hard to buy ash trees anymore.
I think it is.
Because the nursery industry realizes that you don't want to sell people a short-lived tree that is not going to last for very long. So Richard's right that this tree is at risk. This tree is not as strong and healthy as it should be. And that means it is not a good candidate for chemical treatment should emerald ash borer show up in this particular area. So this is kind of a hard thing to talk about, but since we don't have emerald ash borer in the central part of the state, we're not recommending chemical treatment of ash trees at this time. When we have reports of emerald ash borer closer to us, then we will make these evaluations, and trees that are very healthy, very valuable, will justify the expense of being chemically treated to protect them from emerald ash borer. This ash sounds like the white ash in my backyard. 20 years ago, this double leader created a crack. Bark is gone over half of it. It's still there. So you don't know how much longer.
You can't predict, no.
You don't know how long they're going to last, but we know that it's not going to last forever with that kind of structural defect.
All right. And we're getting a couple of emails from people who think that they may have seen these brown marmorated stink bugs. I'm guessing you've gotten a lot of that over the past week, Donald.
Yes, we have been getting samples. I think, as Dwayne Gissel said, the samples in Davenport and Bettendorf have been coming in much more because of the newspaper coverage that they have had in that area. There's nothing like a positive discovery to sort of get other people looking. But yes, we have lots of samples that we have received over the years, the last couple years, and I'm expecting we'll get a lot more. I'm thinking next Monday and Tuesday, when the weather warms up, whatever insects are out there are going to be migrating again. And so I'm sort of braced for next Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday getting a lot of these samples. In the meantime, people can check out our websites. I've discovered that if you just type marmorated in your web search, you'll come up with lots and lots of pictures of the brown marmorated stink bug. Marmorated seems to be a word that no one else has ever used other than for the name of this insect.
All right. And when somebody thinks they've found one, what do they do? I mean, they're not in Scott County, or if they're not in Scott County.
Well, we would like to confirm the distribution. And right now we're looking at suspect samples from the Johnson County area. So we think this is probably more widespread than we already know about. So send us an email, send us a digital image of your insect. If that is a complication for you, if sending a digital image is not something you're comfortable with, and you don't have a 12-year-old kid next door to do it for you, you can go ahead and send us the sample. And what we will do is mark the distribution of the brown marmorated stink bug around the state, just like we followed the distribution of Western corn rootworm, European corn borer, Russian honeysuckle aphid. We've always followed these distributions as they move around the state, Japanese beetle more recently, and that's why we need reports from the public.
All right, and what's the email address that people should send these images to?
It's plural. It's insects, I-N-S-E-C-T-S, insects, at iastate.edu.
All right. That's insects@iastate.edu. And, of course, you can join our conversation right now by giving us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Horticulture Day. With me, Iowa State University Extension entomologist Donald Lewis and Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. Charlie is on the line next from Jacksonville. Hello, Charlie.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
We've got a privet hedge that needs to be trimmed up. Is this the right time of year? And if so, can I take it back to like a foot off the ground?
The best time to do that would be late winter, typically March, early April, early spring. And at that point, if you want to prune it back severely, prune it back to within like 3 to 4 inches of the ground. So sometime in March, early April.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Charlie, thank you so much for your call, and we'll move on now to Bob on the line in Bettendorf. Hi, Bob.
Yeah, hi. I was curious. Can you use the same merit against this stink bug that is used for ash trees or will be used for ash trees against the that particular emerald ash borer?
This will vary with the crop, and it will vary with the situation. In general, the imidacloprid has not looked really good in previous research results with stink bug control. So more likely we will use contact insecticides in our cropping systems rather than systemic insecticides. Now, systemics can be used in some food production, but not by the homeowner. Commercial growers do have some systemics, but by and large, we will use contact insecticides instead of systemic insecticides for this pest when we need to treat crops and when we need to treat the side of the house because there's just too blasted many of them to tolerate.
Okay, I had ash trees and apple trees. I was hoping for one solution.
No, it probably won't work. And, of course, systemics on fruit crops is a problem, and the labels have changed on this over the years. There are some systemics that can be used on fruit, but it has to happen far enough in advance that any insecticide that is translocated into the fruit is no longer there at the time of harvest. So it may not be useful in protecting the late summer, early fall period when the stink bugs are going to be most numerous.
All right, Bob, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, we're going to go to Elsa on the line in Ames. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, a couple weeks ago, I was outside and was putting up Halloween decorations, and I ended up getting bit by those little black bugs so often that I had to actually go back inside. And I'm wondering what those little black bugs are called.
Well, the name of the group, there are actually several of them, those little black biting bugs. The name of the group is minute, as in very tiny, minute mm-hmm. pirate bug, and they're called pirate bugs because when they bite you, you slap your arm and you say, "Arrgh!"
That's perfect.
That's right. That's what you say. And the bite, the pain of the bite is way out of proportion to the size of the insect. All summer long, those were beneficial. They were eating eggs of other insects out in the garden, in the trees, and in the fields. So they are a beneficial predator that uses that blunt little beak to puncture eggshells of other insects and suck the eggs dry. That's a good thing. But that blunt little beak, when it goes through your skin instead of an eggshell, hurts a whole lot. But on those really warm, beautiful days when you want to be out, especially after we've had a bit of a cold spell, those nice 70 and 80 degree days are when those are also migrating, moving around the environment, and that's when they are attracted to us, and they just land to see if you are an insect egg. Once they decide you're not,
they bite you anyway.
They bite anyway. Well, they have to bite to decide.
Oh, I see.
And then they move on.
That is so interesting. And do you know why they would be in the front yard versus the backyard? We've never had a problem in the backyard.
Well, is the front yard sunny and the backyard shady?
Yes, it is.
Okay, that's my theory.
Well, very interesting. So they're called pirate bugs.
Minute pirate bug.
Minute pirate bugs.
And if you want...
That is very perfect.
Yes, and if you want another name that makes no sense at all, they're also called the insidious flower bug, F-L-O-W-E-R kind of flower, the insidious flower bug, which makes no sense. That's why I use their group name, pirate bug, because it's so much more fun to think of them wearing patches and walking on a peg leg.
Elsa, thank you so much for your call. I don't know, insidious works for me. Okay, let's go to another call. Randy's on the line from Poweshiek County. Hey, Randy.
Sun's shining down here in Poweshiek County. I've been dealing with pears for 10 or 15 years, and I've never, ever seen much damage from any kind of moth or borer or anything. Is that usual, depending on the variety? The suckle pear never had any problem. The kefir pears never have any problem, on and on and on. Is that just because the pear trees don't taste good?
Well, as far as your fruit trees, apples have the greatest number of insect pests. you have apple maggot, you have codling moth, you have a number of things. So they're typically high maintenance. On the other hand, pears are bothered less by insects. So they tend to be, for some reason, just kind of low maintenance as far as insect control. So that's pretty common.
But it can happen. And there are a few insects that will attack pears. Part of your good luck in the past may be just your isolation from other fruit trees, other areas that do have more of these insects. But I agree with Richard that we get very few pear samples with insect damage compared to the number of apple samples. So your experience matches ours.
Even though it sounds like the two invasive insects we've talked about this year could be a problem for pears, right?
Especially the brown marmorated stink bug. We don't hear a lot of it, a lot of talk about how it does, how it damages pears, but I'm sure it does. We have so many more apple trees, and that's what gets the news. Now, the spotted winged Drosophila probably won't bother pears because the skin is too thick.
Okay. All right. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. With me, Iowa State University Extension entomologist Donald Lewis and horticulturist Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension. You can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension Horticulture and Donald Lewis, Iowa State University Extension entomologist. They are here to answer your questions at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And here's an email from Kathy. She says that grape hyacinth bulbs that I planted last fall came up in the spring, bloomed, and then faded. Later this summer, they came up again, minus the blooms. I don't know why they came back up, maybe because of our strange weather this year. This week, I had to dig them up because of some construction in the area. When I dug them up, the leaves were still green. Can I replant them and hope for blooms next spring?
Oh, probably not. They can replant those, but they're just kind of out of sync, and I just don't think they're going to bloom next year. In fact, I might be inclined to toss them because I think they may be so weak that they may never bloom again. So if you want some blooming for next spring, I would buy some and plant those. It's still not too late.
Okay. And, you know, I saw some odd things happen, too, here at the end of the summer. Was that because everything went dormant because of the drought?
I think so, possibly. For example, I had some flowers on my lilac, on a lilac. And I think what happened was in July and August, it was so dry that the plants went kind of semi-dormant. And then we got some good rain in mid to late August in the Ames area. And I think that kind of coaxed them out of that semi-dormancy. And the flower buds were already there, so some of the flower buds went ahead and actually developed and bloomed.
Interesting. I had some violets blooming in my yard late summer.
We saw some flowers on a few crab apples. We saw a few flowers on the lilacs. So some of those spring flowering things were kind of fooled.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Bill is on the line in Marshalltown. Hi, Bill.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Centipedes in our basement. Been there for years, and the only policy my wife has is as long as they stay in the basement, fine. As soon as they come upstairs, they're dead. And we were wondering if there's any easy treatment to prevent them from getting active in the basement, and is there any truth to the old hedge apples in the basement or hedge apples and their fumes being deterrent to critters?
By centipedes, you mean something that's about an inch and a quarter long, has three gray stripes, has 30 legs that are really long and thread-like. They run very fast.
I've never counted the legs, but they're pretty quick, and I do believe they get stripes on their back. An inch and a quarter is not right.
Yep. Okay, so that is the house centipede. Well, let me give you the good news first. They're beneficial. They're down there eating the ants and spiders out of your basement so that you don't have to spray so much.
Fantastic.
If they would just stay out of sight of your wife and my wife, we would be happier guys, I think. But house centipede is very difficult to control because they live most of their life in the darkest, quietest, hardest to reach places. So it's behind the boxes, it's behind the water heater, it's under the washing machine, it's way in the back of all those storage areas that we have around our house. And controlling them means getting into all those storage areas, vacuuming it out, doing a little pest control with a little insecticide in those areas, and sorting out the stuff so we don't have so much to store in the first place. So it's going to be difficult to do it, and swatting them as you see them is probably the more practical solution. And if you are going to control them, just think like a centipede and think about the hardest place to get to clean out and spray a little broad-spectrum insecticide.
I'd just soon let them leave and not have to clean up the basement.
Yeah. Now, hedge apples are effective if you have a really good aim, and when you throw the hedge apple, you hit the pest directly.
Okay, so that's the best thing you can do with hedge apples.
That's the best you can do with them, unless you can find some way to sell them to other believers who will buy them for $1 a piece because they believe folk tales rather than science. Now, there are repellent chemicals in hedge apples. We know that they don't taste it good. They have some things that repel insects. But setting intact in the corner of your basement has no effect on insect pests or spiders.
We did have a bad experience. We have a cabin in the Ozarks. We put some on the back porch thinking it would help keep critters off of that. Unfortunately, we found that squirrels or raccoons or something happened to like to shred them into hundreds and hundreds of pieces. The point, I guess, it was going after the seeds because it took us better part of an hour to vacuum up the paint.
Yeah, that's what I've heard also, is that other critters do use them as a food source, but they have to get past that sort of slimy, disagreeable fruit that's around the outside.
All right, Bill, thank you so much for your call, and good luck to you. And let's go next to Joan on the line in Charles City. Hi, Joan.
Good morning.
What's your question?
Well, I had some funny bugs in my tomato patch this year, and I call them fleas. They were very, very small. There could be hundreds of them laying, sitting on a leaf of a tomato plant, and then when I'd get into the patch, they would all fly away, and they were white, kind of a white-gray. I call them fleas, but I don't know. That's probably not what they are. But they were about, looked like the ashes of a cigarette is about what they look like.
Yeah. Know what you mean.
And I've never seen those before.
It's because you live too far north. If you lived in the south, you would know white flies forward and backward, left and right.
Oh, the flies. Okay.
White. Well, this gets hard to explain. They're not flies. So when we say white fly, it's one word.
Uh-huh.
When we say housefly, it's two words because houseflies are flies. White flies are related to scales and aphids and sucking insects. And before they were little white pieces of ash that flew around, they were a little glistening nymph on the underside of your tomato leaf, and they were feeding on the sap from the tomatoes. Sometimes there's so many of them that your plants will wilt from the sap loss. More often, it's just annoying. And especially for us in the northern part of the United States, populations start slowly. They start very low. They build slowly. And it's usually fall before we get this problem. And we can just wait out the summer and not have to do any treatments.
Well, I suppose we were having so much heat.
Heat, southerly winds. But the big question is, these things don't winter outside in Iowa.
Well, good.
Was winter last year that mild that they made it through the winter? Or were these on the transplants that came out of the greenhouse?
Okay.
And that's a logical answer as well. We can't prove it. The greenhouse is going to deny it.
Yeah.
But because they do overwinter in greenhouses, because they are on bedding plants that are coming out of the southern United States and sold up this far north, we can bring white flies with us on our bedding plants. And maybe the reason you haven't had them in the past is you've just been very, very lucky.
Yeah, well, I've just never seen them before, but there were hundreds or thousands of them on this little patch of tomatoes.
Yes, tomato is where we expect to see them. We also find them on hibiscus. That's one where we commonly see them. And the other place to go out and monitor for them is on velvet leaf or buttonweed. that gets a lot of whiteflies as well. But whiteflies are a greenhouse problem that they fight year-round. We're pretty lucky this far north that we don't have to spend much time and effort working on them because winter takes care of them for us.
Sure. Okay, well, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Joan, and you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here is an email from Beverly in Mystic. She says, while checking house plants, I found one with a saucer full of water, which I overlooked for about 2 days, so the soil was very wet. There seemed to be several small patches of bright yellow mold on top of the soil. Upon closer inspection, I discovered that there were many very tiny, rather pointed eggs on top of what I thought was mold. The eggs resembled groups of butterfly or moth eggs. In vain, I checked the internet trying to identify them. Then I decided to take a photo and send it to the extension office. When I returned to the plant, camera in hand, every bit of yellow had vanished. Assuming that the eggs hatched and the hatchlings had burrowed into the soil, I put the plant outside. What do you think?
I don't think those were eggs. Possibly a fungus, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Maybe possibly. A slime mold?
Possibly.
Yeah, there are some other possibilities.
How could it have disappeared like that?
That I'm not sure.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense. I mean, when they dry up, the slime molds especially that I'm thinking of, they go kind of brown and powdery, and on a brown potting soil, maybe you wouldn't see that as well. But insect eggs like ladybugs and stink bugs, the ones that lay their eggs out on the surface like that would not burrow into the soil. I'm trying to think of an insect that would hatch its eggs and burrow into the soil, and there aren't very many not any are coming to mind for me. So I kind of doubt also that it was insect eggs, but I think she lives in an appropriately named town.
I was just going to say that. Being in Mystic, this is certainly
Mystic,
a mystical experience.
I think she's created a mystery for us, and we may never know.
All right. Here's an email from Dave in southeastern Iowa. He says, we have a large soft maple tree that provides a lot of shade for our house and yard, but it's rotting and we'll need to take it down sometime. I'd like to know what native oak tree grows the quickest that we might plant as a shade tree, or what other type of native tree you'd recommend.
I would strongly consider a red oak. They're a nice tree. They are native to Iowa. They're one of the faster growing oak trees. So I would strongly consider that as a replacement. I might also consider possibly the honey locust, which is native to Iowa, but the varieties we grow are both podless and thornless. So that'd be a possibility too.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Chad is on the line next from Cedar Falls. Hello, Chad.
Hello. How are you today?
Good. What's your question?
We moved into place about 5 years ago. We were able to grow some pumpkins and squash the first 2 years, and then the last 3 years, we haven't been able to get anything. I think we've got some squash vine borers out there. For a non-pesticide treatment to that, I have heard that you can spray parasitic nematodes on the soil. Just wondering what they thought about that and possibly where to get it.
Parasitic nematodes have become a little more difficult to obtain because companies that jumped into that business with dollar signs in their eyes have realized that nematodes aren't as good as what we originally expected. In laboratory settings, in petri dishes, yep, these nematodes get right into squash vine borers, termites, iris borers, others, and they do a very good job of control. When we put the nematodes in the real world in soil that alternates between too hot, too cold, too dry, too wet, they just don't seem to find the pests in adequate numbers. Now, mail order is where you're going to probably have to go to buy them. Someplace like Gardens Alive catalog is one that I would suggest but not recommend because there are probably several others. And I have some very good friends who will argue with me about the effectiveness of nematodes that I tend to be fairly pessimistic based on the research I've seen. But some iris growers have told me they were able to clean up iris borer with parasitic nematodes. So maybe there's something for some people some of the time. I wouldn't bet the ranch on it, though.
All right, Chad, thank you so much for your call. Ellen is on the line next from Des Moines. Hi, Ellen.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I have an older family tree. It's a pear tree that's about 50 years old. And I've tried, it's not producing much now, and we hate to cut it down. But I've tried grafting 3 times in the last 3 years. Actually, I hired a horticultural student to help me and ordered rootstock twice from, I got it from a company in Washington State. And I'm not sure if that was the right place to go. But every time, they all failed. I'm trying to figure out, should I just give up on trying to graft off of this old tree and save it? Or is there some resource for grafting? And I know it's quite a particular technique.
Right. Well, there's different ways to...
Do you have any advice? Should I give up or try again?
I think I'd try again. There are different ways to graft, and you probably got the rootstocks from Rain Tree Nursery in Washington.
Yes.
They're one of the first, they're one of the only nurseries that sell rootstock plants. So I guess I'd try it again. Get a pear rootstock, and did you try a whipper tongue graft on that?
Oh, I can't remember that.
I think that's fairly common. It's called a whip or tongue graft. And you take a rootstock, and you take a branch from the tree that's basically about the same size as far as diameter, and you make some cuts, and then basically kind of slide them together, and then hopefully,
I made a lot of cuts last year, and then used a little bit of tubing and hooked it all together and put it on the rootstock, and I had nothing. But I'm an amateur. I may need to hire somebody to do.
But I would try again, try several and hopefully maybe one or two will take.
Several as in dozens, right?
Well, I would try maybe 6 or 7
Okay.
And hopefully one or two will take. So, but sometimes it does take practice. But I would not give up.
All right, Ellen, good luck with that. And I think we have time to squeeze in a couple very short email questions here. Nancy says, I have a potted mum plant from a nursery, and I've enjoyed it in the pot. Now I'd like to plant it in my flower garden. What's the best way to do that?
Well, you can, but I'm not terribly optimistic that mums that we plant in the fall almost invariably winter kill. So I would plant it as soon as you can, keep it well watered, and then probably sometime around mid-November, I would take some chicken wire fencing, put that around the plant, and then fill that with some straw or pine needles so it has some winter protection. And that's the best you can do. And then if they don't if it doesn't survive next spring, don't be disappointed.
All right.
But at least you tried.
And Steve from Ames has this question. Is it too late to put in new garlic and asparagus beds this fall?
I would plant asparagus next spring. As far as the garlic, I would plant it, if you can, this weekend or next week.
All right. Richard Duran, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture. Donald Lewis, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Charity. Good to be here.
Donald Lewis, Iowa State University Extension Entomologist. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan. Technical support from Garrett Van Leeuwen in Ames. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up Monday on the show, we'll talk about a new documentary about Ding Darling. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.